and welcome to Columbo is the podcast all about the detailed, forensic, way over-explained world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
I have completely lost your audio.
Oh, cool.
And it's back.
Yay. What's going on? I don't know.
It's fine.
I'm sure I ruined it all.
No, everything's going great. Nothing's wrong. The world is fine, and nothing is on fire, and this episode comes out around the start of November, and I'm sure everything's great, and we're all fine down here now. How are you doing? How you doing, man?
I'm okay, I guess. Yeah. You know, living in the anarchist jurisdiction of Seattle.
Oh, it must be tough.
You know. Oh yeah, yeah. It's real tough. You know, because it's
It's a nightmare. You've got people driving around on roads.
There's in their cars.
Folks going back and forth. You can hear.
It's so weird. You can walk into, you know, coffee shops and order coffee to go.
What liberals. This is the future liberals want. Well, stay strong, Ben. This week we're taking a look at Season 13, Episode 2, A Trace of Murder. If you're watching along on Peacock, this episode is listed as Season 10, Episode 11, because everything is weird and wrong.
What?
I don't know. This episode stars Shira Denise and David Rash as lovers who conspire to frame their unwitting husband for the murder of a former business associate. Denise is Columbo actor Peter Falk's real-life wife, his second wife, I believe. Yep. And this is her sixth and final appearance as a character on Columbo.
Oh.
Yeah. she got a starring role, and then she's out.
Yeah.
She got to be the murderer, and then she's done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she didn't. No, she was a conspirator, I
guess. She was a conspirator. Yeah. I mean, it was her idea, so.
Right.
Accessory to murder. That's just, I think it's the same thing as murder when you get charged.
Exactly.
Like, as culpable.
Yeah, she's not getting away free from this one by any shake.
No. Rash is a familiar face to just about anybody, having played hundreds of douchebags in films and shows such as Veep, Burn After Reading, and he can currently be seen in the show that everyone in my Twitter feed keeps talking about. I have no idea what it is. Succession. Apparently, it's very good. And people keep telling me that I don't know where to watch it or even if I'm interested in it, but people won't stop telling me about it.
It's an HBO show. That's what I know.
It's the Schitt's Creek of dramas, in that people just keep telling me about it. And the more people tell me about it, the less I want to watch it, paradoxically. Oh,
that's not where I thought you were going. but like, yeah, I mean, yeah, you shouldn't let other people ruin Schitt's Creek for you. Succession.
Oh, no, not you.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Oh, no.
Ben,
that's not what I said. I didn't tell you to go watch it. I just said you shouldn't let other people ruin it for you.
Anyway, this episode also features Columbo's longest running side character, Barney, the bean slinger.
Yeah, Barney did his fucking chili place change again?
He sold his bar from a few episodes ago, and now he owns a large family-style restaurant.
Yeah, trading up, I guess.
Yeah. Also, playing the framed husband is Barry Corbin in yet another entry in his long career playing rich, angry Texans, which I think at this point is he's method.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think he's just living that life. No, he's probably a lovely person. I don't know. And I have no interest in knowing.
Yeah, that mustache isn't lovely, I'll tell you what.
It's a big stinky mustache.
It's not a good one. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, he has a very Yosemite Sam sort of style in this.
Yeah, he does have big Yosemite Sam energy for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This episode is it's very uneven. Let's just say that.
You know, yeah, I was going to say this episode is a good idea done poorly.
Yeah. I think there's some great dialogue. There's the final scene is really good and really well done.
You mean in Barney's?
No. The catch.
The actual catch
is great. The catch is great. But the the final scene.
Yeah, the fucking denouement is the part that's just
it's
like, why?
there's a lot of stuff that's like it doesn't make any sense and it's incredibly stupid. Like for example, Columbo. There's a cat the murder victim's house. I guess we should probably set up the actual episode.
Yeah,
just
a little bit would help.
So you've got Shira Denise and Barry Corbin. They are unhappily married rich couple.
Yes,
they are the
Calverts. It's Clifford Calvert and Kathleen Calvert. And according to the subtitles, her name is spelled with a C, which means that's fun. Everybody has C's. They're just C's all the way down.
And he has an investment. He had some sort of investment opportunity that he overinflated. Do you know what exactly the value, what it was that was overinflated?
Yeah, I caught that stuff because the murder victim's lawyer talks about it. But basically, Clifford had a venture capital company, and he exaggerated the value of investments and some other stuff and basically screwed a bunch of investors, which sounds about right for a venture capital company.
Yeah. And so this guy, Howard Seltzer, is suing Calvert, and he's going to win. Like everyone pretty much admits that he's going to win.
Yeah.
Because they basically got him dead to rights. So Kathleen and Pat, Kathleen is the wife and Pat is her lover.
Yeah.
They conspire to murder Seltzer and to frame Cliff for the murder.
Yes. So basically they start with talking about killing Cliff. Divorcing Cliff, but Kathleen's prenup is so airtight, basically she won't get anything out of it, and she wants to spend Cliff's money but not be attached to Cliff. And rather than murder him where she's suspect number one, she suggests, hey, let's kill this guy that he hates and frame him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea being that after this guy goes to prison, the lawsuit goes away because the plaintiff is deceased.
Correct.
And I mean, although
I don't think that's quite how it would work.
Like, this guy probably has some sort of business entity that's investing this money. It's probably not his personal direct money. There is probably a lawsuit would continue. Presumably he has some sort of heir and that person would have standing to continue, you know, the lot. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, they say that like he's single, he doesn't have any kids. Like that's part of Patrick's conversation with him.
But presumably that money goes somewhere. So right. I don't know. Maybe he's an incredibly stupid rich person and he hasn't set up any sort of like trust or anything.
Are we talking
for
about
his money?
Cliff, or are we talking
Seltzer.
About Seltzer?
We're talking about
Seltzer.
Because, once he's dead, presumably whoever gets the money would continue the lawsuit in
his
name.
Well, there are other investors who seem interested in process. So I don't think that problem would go away.
Outside of the television world, because obviously this is not real and completely made
no.
up. So the logic doesn't have to make real world sense. It just has to make TV sense. And this does make TV sense at the very least.
Oh yeah,
But they're gonna have the lawsuit go away, and then once he goes to prison, Kathleen will get all of his money.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, she would just be living in his house while he was in prison.
Yeah, and he would be able, like, he could probably still divorce her and not let her have any money. But you know, again, TV sense, not sense. Patrick is it turns out a forensic investigator, the chief forensic investigator. yeah. for this case.
Who, you know, Columbo's never interacted with before. And,
no, he was teaching. He was previously an instructor, and he came back to the force recently. But
I just love that. I will say, I do love that they don't give us his name or identity, even though we see him in bed with Kathleen.
Yeah.
You know, and he goes through, you know, killing Seltzer and everything else before mm-hmm. we get his name. And it's not until he shows up at the scene, you know, as the forensics investigator, that we actually get his name. And that's like, that's our sort of like, oh, it's the twist on the formula. There's an inside guy.
It's a good twist. You know, we've seen that before with, what's his, Robert, it's a play.
Which one? Which episode? I mean, I know you're right, but I can't remember.
It's the one where there was the police chief, and it was.
Oh yeah, right. Where it was. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah. Not quite the same as like a boss, but
yeah,
still yeah, somebody.
But someone on the investigation team,
yeah,
trying to bring it down from the inside. So this guy. Is he's going to they make a plan. Basically, they're going to plant cat hair onto mm-hmm. his clothes.
Yep.
They're using this gun, this unsecured gun.
Yeah, his .38 revolver that he keeps in his desk drawer, unlocked.
Unlocked. Yeah.
I mean, that's very Texas. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I, yeah, it's like they're gonna use his gun, and. And also they leave like a cigar end, like not a
right.
used cigar, but like a clipped end.
Yeah.
At the scene of the crime.
Well, he takes out his pocket knife and cuts the end off of it with the scissors on his Swiss Army knife.
Yep.
And then just leaves that end in an ashtray.
Yeah.
And that's our fun setup.
And already I'm like, wait, you're a forensics investigator and this is your idea?
I know. Why not have the wife take one of the ends from an actual cigar? That's that's his real cigars and would presumably have like
DNA on
DNA
it.
Or
Yeah, I mean, I thought for sure he was going to light the cigar in the house or something, and like there was going to be, you know, the aroma and stuff that, like, I was not expecting it to be all about the cut.
Right. Which turns out to be very important because he has an extremely specific way of cutting his cigars.
Yeah.
He uses a notch cutter, which cuts like a V-shaped notch in cigars.
Right. And as he explains to Columbo in this episode, in the tail end, you know, it's to keep the filler tobacco from getting in his mouth, apparently. Which, I mean, does actually make sense. Like, I know that's what that's for, but it's just like he's so angry about it, and he also basically talks to Columbo like Columbo is the uncultured and uncivilized one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, in the first like 3 seconds of being introduced to you in this episode, you are horribly misogynistic and just a complete wanker. And you punch a dude because he's suing you for being a crook. How is it that Columbo is the like uncivilized one here?
Yeah, I mean, this guy sucks. He's not great. You know, they are framing him for murder. He's not a murderer, but he is a crook. He is a cheat. He did cheat this poor guy Seltzer out of his you know, money. But Seltzer's a rich guy, so he probably got it by ripping off other people. So fuck him. Two. But yeah, I don't know this episode. So this is a Vince McVitie. Episode. This is another directed by Vince McVitie, who did a lot of the previous Columbos. Mm-hmm. And he did, let's see, hold on a second here. My brain. He did Rest in Peace, Mrs. Columbo. Death Hits the Jackpot. It's All in the Game. Of course, Undercover, which we just watched, and Strange Bedfellows.
Right.
He did three in a row.
I mean, it's not, I don't know. It's not a, it's not an episode where I feel like the directing's necessarily bad or anything. Cause nobody gives a bad performance. It's no, just,
that's kind of what I wanted to say by saying that. So the writer is Charles Kipps. And he is a longtime collaborator, or was, they haven't worked together in a while, but with Bill Cosby, writer and producer. Okay. He worked on the Cosby. He worked on Fatherhood, which is an animated show by Bill Cosby. He wrote the Fat Albert movie. If you remember, there was a movie starring Kenan Thompson played Fat Albert, live action.
Oh, no, I didn't remember that, but I mean,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, that casting checks out.
Yeah, so I would like, that kind of makes sense because this episode is kind of written as a comedy in like a weird way.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely kind of a doofiness to their sort of scheme. Yeah. Or at least once they start kind of interacting, and it's like when they'll call each other on payphones, and like the fact that she would call him at work to talk about this, and he's just sitting there on the phone talking about, you know, murdering and throwing Columbo off the trail while he's staring Columbo in the face through his office window. Yeah. Like it's hard to take some of that seriously.
Yeah. Also, Columbo has really turned a corner for me in this episode from adorably, like, sort of eccentric into, like, off-puttingly weird.
You like, mean the bag of bananas he brings to the crime scene?
Yeah. He brings a bag of bananas, just starts handing bananas out to everybody. Yeah. And everybody's like, yeah, great, I'd love a banana, which is, that's weird.
Yeah, and then they're all just standing there eating bananas in this dead man's house. Also, there were like 30 people there. There were so many people there. And I get that, like, you know, one of the, you know, there are people from the alarm company there. But there's also a big part of me that's like, wait, what? No, I don't think they get to go through the crime scene alongside the forensics.
He offers everyone a banana, but he doesn't offer a banana to the woman from the alarm company. And that upset me. Columbo, come on.
Yeah, that's... Maybe he thought it would be rude.
No, it's...
I don't know.
It's okay. I just don't know why Columbo is so weird now.
He really got... It's. I mean, he was already eccentric, but this is... There's some real weirdness in this one.
At one point, he is, like, bare-handing a peeled banana and, like, walking around the crime scene, and that's so strange.
Yep.
That's like monkey behavior. That's really weird.
And there's never any, like, there's no callback to it. There's no, it's just that.
And
so
I want to be clear. Peter Falk did suffer from dementia. I don't think, and I want to create a division between Columbo, the character, and Peter Falk, the person, because it didn't really start getting very bad for him until a little bit later in his life, after he stopped playing Columbo.
Right.
But the character is being written now like a person with dementia. Like
a little
He is doing strange things. He says, so there's a cat, the cat hair that they're going to place, they're going to take this cat hair from the cat and place it on the framed person.
Yeah, there's like an elaborate handoff to get the, like, basically a pill bottle full of cat hair and like fibers from the carpet,
and then put that cat hair and fibers from the carpet on into a like a purse, like a small clutch jewel box purse, and then she wipes it on the back of his jacket.
Yes.
It's weird.
It's so
this cat is kind of a big part of the early part of this episode, and the cat runs out when the first police officer arrives, and Columbo says, like, you need to find that cat. That cat is the only witness to this crime.
Because the cat's going to tell us who did it.
Yeah. Columbo acts like once they find that cat, the cat's going to give them some testimony.
Right. I mean, it's like the cat's hair is already all over the house. You already have a hair sample. You don't need the actual living cat. I mean, if you want to chew out the guy for letting the cat run out of the house and not catching the cat, then, I mean, I think that's legit. Because when I saw
if you're responding to an alarm call and a man's been murdered, I think you got other things on your mind. That's completely normal.
Well, you don't know if a man's been murdered, but, you know, if the cat dashes away, I guess, I mean, you know what? You have a fair point. You do have a fair point. The alarm went off.
It was a panic, but he hit the panic button and the door's unlocked, you know. Like,
right.
Yeah. He does draw his gun before walking into a house, and I feel like
that's accurate.
That seems. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's there were a couple of things in this where I was like, oh yeah, that's either I made a note like when Columbo goes to the party, the wedding that they were at, you know, to try and suss out Clifford's alibi and whether or not it checks out. And he's talking to the parents of the bride. The father is actually an actor from the Jeffersons.
Oh, okay.
One of the first people who was part of it, an interracial marriage on television in the States.
Oh, okay.
So kind of a big deal on that. But yeah, they're like super character actor-y. But anyway.
That would be Franklin Cover.
Yes, yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Who I've seen in a number of other things too. But yeah, really, really selling it all. Sorry, Mac.
Yeah.
I completely lost my train of thought.
Oh yeah, you definitely did. So they go to the wedding and meet this this family.
Yeah, well, just trying to establish the alibi.
Right.
Shit. What was I thinking of here? Is it in notes?
Basically the thing that they do is they send the husband to the church, commit the murder sort of when he's in transit,
when he's driving to Marina Del Rey, from somewhere in Orange County, which is apparently where he lives. So like, why is LAPD involved in the anyway?
Yeah.
You know,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's not important.
Columbo has infinite jurisdiction. He's solving boat crimes. He solves crimes in Mexico. He doesn't give a shit.
I know. He's been in Malibu. Like, we get it. Yeah. He's
all over.
Oh, that's what it is that she gives him fruit. The mother of the bride gives him fruit and is like, what a cop's salary is. I know y'all don't make much. And I made a note because I was like, that ain't how it is, because around here it's like six figures.
That is actually how it was.
Yeah. Right. I just made that note of like that doesn't track anymore for sure.
1995. I actually was looking this up, and a starting salary for a police officer in 1995, like a beat cop, was $30,000, which is pretty. That's 1995 money, but that's still pretty mean. Like you're not going to be living high on the hog, and especially if Columbo and you're supporting a nebulous, indistinct amount of family, with several children or no children, or
children and dogs and Italian relatives.
There's at least two dogs or a line of dogs similarly named dogs.
A lineage of dogs named Dog.
He actually has 8 dogs and they're all named Dog, and they're all exactly like that.
Yeah,
at any time. It's like the Welsh corgis, except just Columbo with like a... That would be amazing,
A
by
bunch
the way.
Of just floppy
basset hounds following
basset
around.
Hounds, sorry.
I don't know why. But there's a lot of fruit business in this episode. Columbo has the bananas. Later he's handing out apples. And he tries to give an apple to Pat. And Pat holds up a banana like, I've got a banana.
it's so weird. It's so weird and dumb. And I don't know why there's fruit business.
Is that the banana that did Columbo give him that banana in an earlier scene?
I guess so. I guess he had it in his office.
I don't
still.
Think. I think.
I
maybe
don't remember
he did.
Seeing it.
I think but, maybe that he did, but they cut it out, and that's why it doesn't make any sense. I bet that he gave him that banana the previous night, and that was the joke. But they cut it out for whatever reason.
For
they
time,
had to,
probably.
Yeah, they probably had to fit in like five more extremely bad process slow motion shots. So they needed to make a couple seconds of time here.
I mean,
here
listen, you saw that patrol car turn around, you know, in that sped up footage to go investigate the alarm. You know how much they had to like crunch for time. No, I got nothing.
There's a real like there's definitely a bit of the we had to tweak this in editing to make it make it any sense at all, because there are a couple shots that are slowed down so much where like someone does something but they must have done it way too fast for the the edit to make sense,
right?
Like there's a scene where Shira Denise puts like a bottle in her pocket, but she like it's like framey so much it's like two frames a second, because she must have just like really whipped it into her pocket, and they're just like, we need to get this shot and we can't afford to go
retake it.
There's
there's weird stuff like that. I mean, there are some I would say there are some moments of ADR in this one that are even more noticeable than usual, where it's like because it's a single line inserted into a dialogue that is clearly coming from the track, like Columbo will be talking and then there's like an extra line he says at the end where it's just it doesn't even match the timbre or tone at all. It's wild.
Sometimes they add in I felt like they added in a couple jokes as well. There's a line that Columbo says when he says that he wants to interview Shira Denise and he wants Pat to come along, and he says three eyes are better than one. Which
I thought that
does Columbo have a glass? Now we need to have this conversation. Talked about this before. Does Columbo have a glass eye? Now it is not a disputed fact that Peter Falk himself has a glass eye. But does Columbo have a glass eye? I guess we have to now say that he does.
I think this is the point where it is acknowledged in some way. Because
I think
the previously line the way that they play it, like early in the series, they don't act like that is part of the character or anything. They just sort of ignore that is a thing for Peter Falk.
Not that necessarily if someone had a glass eye, you would always be talking about it, but he doesn't act like a person who is only seeing through one eye. He acts like a person who sees through both eyes. Like sometimes he'll actually like hold up his eyes, like he'll like look, shield both eyes or like do something in a way that would seem to imply he was stereoscopic. But I think the line between... So just as the line between Shira Denise and Major Barrett Roddenberry is becoming thinner and thinner and they're slowly merging into one person, the line between Columbo and Peter Falk is slowly disappearing. I feel like they are like more and more we are getting a Peter Falk a character than a Columbo as a distinct different person.
Yeah, I think at this point, the line is really, really blurring this late into the series. That it's so weird that it's like, okay, sure, I guess we want to make a joke about your glass eye. But
I guess that's where we are now as a as a show.
It's such a weird episode for I just can't help. I keep thinking about that last scene where it's like,
okay, so let's do the catch and then we'll do the wrap up scene. Columbo basically figures out that there's a picture where Barry Corbin didn't have Cat fur on him, And then there's a picture later where he does have cat fur on him and he's right. dancing and, with his wife.
Right. And after, and her hair is right in the middle of all of it. And
yeah. And her hand, well, her hand her is hand, on hand, his back. Sorry, like right. basically it's spreading like, it this on. Is the yeah. picture of her like spreading cat hair onto his back.
Right. But it is like, and he learns that from, you know, talking to Cliff, and kind of establishing sort of the sequence of events when he got to the wedding and all of that. But
yeah.
But so, but yeah, he go ahead.
The thing that irritates me. So, and then basically we can talk about this. It's really good, but I feel like it's, if we over explain it, it's not like there's no way to sort of represent it. But basically yeah. he isolates them across the street and then like goes to one and in view of the other and says like, she's trying to fucking button you up. And then he yeah. goes over to her and says like, that guy over there, he's pointing the finger at you. Yeah. And then they like, they basically confess.
Yeah, like and the really clever to... the clever part to me, which was also tracks because, you know, cops can lie to you.
Oh, yeah. This is actually a very common police tactic yeah. is to go in and say the other person said that you're the ringleader. He gave you up and then you confess.
Yeah, this is a thing.
The other person didn't say anything. And then they just use the information. Yeah,
this is a thing my dad used to do to me as a kid. And I didn't yeah. know I didn't know any better. But he literally would pull this cop manipulation bullshit. And my siblings didn't fall for it, but I did.
But you did.
I really, you know, like he goes over to her with the photos that he brought to show Patrick. And he's like,
right.
hey, he just fingered you.
He gave me these photos.
Yeah. 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 He's like, oh, he gave me these photos. Look at these photos where... Look, his back is clean and now his back has shit all over it and your hand's on his back. And then he also does the thing of like, oh, hey, and next time someone asks you if you knew him before this, you should probably tell them the truth because the cat's out of the bag, you know. And then she's just like, oh, the fucker. And then he runs across the street to do the exact same thing to Patrick. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really...
and then they race into the DA's office to tell
each other out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like... And that's kind of marvelous, but like... But it's...
Yeah.
It's that then after that, we...
There's some wonderful detective work that goes directly into it. So yeah. Columbo says like... or he's brought... them out to dinner, both of the conspirators, to Barney's restaurant, and he's like trying to get information about like who would have had a motive to yeah. like who would have had access to the gun, who would have had motive,
right?
And he suspects the wife, but he doesn't really know what's going on yet.
Yeah, at this point he hasn't put it together that Patrick is yeah. in on this, even though he's seen Patrick be weird at the crime scene because the
right.
the piece of the cigar wasn't in the ashtray when Patrick shows up, and he's like clearly distraught and freaking out over it. Like Columbo takes notice of this, but hasn't pieced it together that he's actually part of this thing until they're in Barney's and there's some motion on the table, basically, with coffee and everything else.
And then in a way that's very subtle and yeah. interesting and
yeah.
and good. So
yeah,
that's the part that's really frustrating. So I think that this episode does what I'm gonna step out of Columbo and say this reminds me a lot of Sherlock, the most recent, the Moffat Sherlock.
Sure.
Because it doesn't trust you to figure out what's going on. It has yeah. to like show you and explain to you. So Columbo has this great scene. He basically notices, and if you're paying attention to the scene, you can see it too.
Yeah, when, it's right there on the screen. Yeah.
Yeah, when Pat gives the coffee to Cherie,
Kathleen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he gives her the coffee, he places they say it's equal or whatever, but it, you know, yeah. he places it in front of her and
yeah, like moves, he moves the cream out of the way
and not the and doesn't place the sugar in front of her.
Right.
And Columbo notices that and then excuses himself and goes to the bathroom and has like a realization moment. And then later when they're walking her to the car, he Pat goes, opens the back, he's sitting in the back door, he opens the back door and then goes to the front door and opens that for her.
Yeah.
And Columbo like puts it together. I don't feel like I need to explain why these things are significant, like like that there is enough in those scenes to go like, that's weird, he seems to like understand what she wants, like
that's
enough.
Yeah, you don't have to have it explicitly laid out for you, but it is twice. Very clear that he is fucking up because he is yeah. still anticipating her needs in a way
which is good. It's a really good subtle thing, and it's the kind of thing that a person would do unconsciously that that shows a familiarity.
Yep.
And the part where the episode falls down is that they explain everything. They explain the car thing twice.
Yeah.
Because Columbo says to the cop, who's the same cop who was looking for the cat earlier.
Uh-huh.
He says that like, oh, did she ride in the front or the back on the way here? And the cop says the front. I opened the back for her, but she got in the front.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's
good.
Explaining it a little too much, but that's okay. If you leave it there, like, you're fine. And then Columbo like has a monologue saying they know each other. And it's like, no, yeah, we know Columbo.
Yeah.
Like it's okay. Yeah. You don't have to explain.
Yeah. So, yeah. The episode showed us that they know each other because they were in bed together when we saw them together.
We get who it. Who is this monologue for the benefit of? It's like, that's like a bad writer thing where like, for example, Columbo goes to the house of the couple, the parents from the bride from the wedding later. And he says, I need to look at the photos. And then the guy yells, Martha! And she's like, what? And he's like, Columbo's here. He needs to look at the photos. Like, guys, if you were looking for something to trim from this episode, trim the thing that restates the exact thing that he said while adding no new information.
Listen,
like, it's such a loose episode.
They just wanted to give him a little more screen time to you know, just to shine. I mean, really, it's just that. It's weird and it's sloppy in those fronts because it detracts from
the story. If it wasn't bad enough to explain it that one time, he then post this scene, this pretty good scene where they point the finger at each other.
Yeah.
Columbo goes to Barney's after hours and is it after hours? They're setting the chairs up on the table, but then when they go outside, it's like midday. So
yeah,
I don't know what's happening.
I don't know. They're
right
like,
now.
Maybe they're closing between lunch and dinner. That's all
yeah,
I got.
Maybe it, that, yeah, some places do that, but you wouldn't put the chairs up in between lunch and dinner, would you?
No, I don't think so. You would just reset everything and then, you know,
You need to mop twice a day? Like, what is going on in there, Barney?
It's so weird. And that's part of what makes me wonder if that was just a straight pickup where they were like, oh, no, that's not a good enough ending. We need to explain
it. I guess
it
could be
the
beginning of the day because he's pulling chairs down.
Maybe.
It's the beginning of the day. Okay. But anyway, that doesn't listen. That just because that makes sense doesn't forgive the rest of this bullshit fucking scene. So he comes in and Columbo says, oh, I'll tell you how I knew that they knew each other. It happened right here. And then he shows us the thing we already saw in slow motion for no reason. We already know they know each other.
Hey, listen, it's just, did you get it? Did you get it? Come on, stupid audience. Did you get it yet? Like
and
that's,
all,
yeah.
But it's so long. It is it's like a 10-minute scene of him explaining something with like so much unnecessary business. Like I'm sitting here. He's sitting here. You're her. And you're me, and I'm the other guy. And then, like, he acts it all out and then explains every part of the thing he's acting out with flashbacks to the scene as it's happening. And it's like, all you had to say was, when they came to drink here, he gave her the equal, and he, you know, took the cream and the sugar away from her. Yeah. How did he know to do that? That's literally all he has to say.
That's all we needed. Yeah.
We can like use our brain and memory and remember a scene that was very recent. Even if you want to include a short cutaway, that's fine. But you don't need to do a whole production of like having the guy pull the car around front so everyone can stand in front of the car and replicate like our. Is it that Barney and his like bar assistant have a learning disability and they need to be like, are they visual learners and they need to be shown like exactly what's happening? Like
Yeah, I think some of it is like, oh, Columbo just really likes showing off. But honestly, if I were to pick at it, my bet would be either notes were like, no, this shit is too confusing. You need to lay this out plainly for your audience at the end. Yeah. Go back and do a pickup in the restaurant. Or it was just, how many lines does Barney need to step up a pay grade for being in this episode?
Yeah.
Because, like, those are my best guesses. Otherwise, there's just no excuse for it being there.
There are episodes where Columbo does this and then later does this kind of thing, notices something and notices it visually and then talks about it later.
Yeah.
The one I always think of is Double Shock, where he walks into the bathroom. He touches the tub. He touches, like, all of the towels.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he doesn't say, there's no dialogue in this scene. It's just him poking things and making, like, faces.
Yeah.
But it's so perfectly done that every time he makes a face, you know what he's thinking.
Yeah.
And the failure of this episode is that you kind of don't know what he's thinking, but he will tell you about it later. Like,
yeah.
There's no clarity in the moment because they know that they have an out later to tell you about something again.
Right. And like, if it was written that way, I don't know, man. It just, it's a bummer because there's a lot of good in this episode. And I think, and I think without the weird sort of exposition garbage, I think it would be a little stronger, you know, because again, good performances.
And some decent sort of forensic stuff. I generally think that they had a pretty good plan that was incredibly poorly executed.
Oh, yeah. The basic plan, pretty good. The actual execution of it, not so great. The fact that you immediately were freaking out because you couldn't find the one piece of evidence that you planted at the scene, definitely not good that you were doing that in front of a detective.
Right.
You know, and that he immediately was like, oh, did you find something? And you're like,
if you're a forensic guy, like, couldn't you just, I don't know, couldn't you think of something that was a little harder for someone to just like take away?
Yeah.
Like, why would it be such a clean snip on this thing too? Like, it's such a clean piece of evidence.
I know
that it is incredibly suspicious.
Again, that's why I thought for sure he was going to like light it up or some other kind of thing to, you know, put the smell there as a, like, I got nothing.
Yeah. Well, listen.
But Denise had a whole lot of amazing outfits in this one.
She did have a lot of amazing outfits. She was basically like naked under a nightie at one point that was incredibly see-through.
Yeah.
And 1995, I don't know how they got away with that one.
I don't know. I really wasn't expecting. I mean, frankly, when she shows up in that emerald dress, I was just floored. I was like, holy shit, she's not playing around.
No. And props to this episode because I feel like, there's two ways you could go with this, right? Like, I think the script sort of seemed to have called for younger actors for both parts, I think.
Yeah.
Probably. Because I think when you want this kind of a wife role, you kind of want like the young trophy wife. Like that's typically what this is. Like this is like someone in their late 20s.
Yeah, the idea is usually like, right, that he married someone much younger and much more attractive than he would be, you know. And so they're looking for an out because they're married to this sort of older jerk.
Yeah. But they're like, they're not, I mean, they're not that different in age. Like, she was born in 49, he was born in 40.
Yeah.
So like,
That's
not that big a spread, especially when you're in your 40s or whatever. Like, that's not as big a thing. But it's, I don't know, it's a little weird. But I think that David Rash and Shira Denise do a really great job, and I'm not saying it as a fault. I just think I'm glad that the show went that way, because I think it'd be very easy to cast younger, quote unquote sex, like young and sexy.
Right.
But
Right. And obviously we know that, you know, part of the reason that, you know, she's around for like six episodes of this series is, you know, Falk.
I think it's probably just pure acting talent.
I mean, she's really great.
I mean, she is very good, but it is undeniable that she would not have been given the lead role in this if she wasn't married to the
producer. Well, I mean, everything is like connections and who you know and you know,
that's
whether or not they will give you a shot. And you know, if it's your husband, your spouse, chances are.
I mean, she went out, you know, playing the murderer. So good on her. And she got hers, and she, you know, she stayed with him up until he passed, and they were, by reports, happy together. So, you know,
there's a really charming photo of the two of them, I think, on a red carpet somewhere, and she's holding up a dog. Like a poodle, and they are both just grinning ear to ear.
Good on them. I'm you know, listen, this, I mean, this episode, if it's anything, I would say once they've confessed, stop the episode.
Yeah, you're good there. You're fine. Unless, like, you just really need to see Barney do his thing.
If you really want the raw machismo that only a John Finnegan can bring to the screen, then I would say leave it out. You know, God bless him. At least he got another year of SAG equity, right? Like, he got to keep his insurance. Like, God bless him.
That's what I'm talking about right there. Yeah.
You know, thanks, Peter. you know, you get older, it's harder to get work. I appreciate you bringing me in. Keep my insurance for another year. So that we only have three episodes of Columbo left.
I know.
Until the end.
We're almost there.
Yeah.
We're almost that last one.
I want to say something, because I want you to get excited, because going into the final stretch, I think it's been a little rough recently. The George Went one was okay. This one was okay. The next episode, back again. You know he had to do it to him. It's Patrick McGoohan, starring and directing.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Okay. Ashes to Ashes is the next episode. If you are following along with us, you can watch all of Columbo on Peacock for free. Well, not all of it. You can't watch Prescription Murder, and you can't watch the first pilot. That is not available for streaming, but you can watch the rest of it. So Ashes to Ashes in season 10.
So that would be season 10, episode 12?
Yes, I believe that is the case.
Okay.
That's going to do it for that. Well, I don't know. Did you have any clothing stuff?
I mean, I already mentioned it, really. Just as far as like outfits
she's
and costuming, like
she's killing it. The 95 was a good year for her. She was
not so good for. Yeah, jackets and suits and structure.
Everybody else looked like a polyester nightmare, but she was making it work.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, all right. So that's going to do it for this week. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah?
You want a banana?
Yeah, actually, all right, sure.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take a banana.
I mean, I guess. That seems like a very weird thing. I guess I'll eat a banana over this corpse of another human being. What a normal thing for me to do. I'm a cop.